Musician, songwriter, soundtrack, and record producer T-Bone Burnett has said that the Secret Sisters echo and promise better days. They're a breath of fresh air, and he should know because Mr. Burnett produced the first two albums for this Alabama-born singing sibling duo. The Secret Sisters perform at City Winery tonight, but right now they're here. They're joining us live here at WABE. Lydia and Laura Rogers, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to be here.
Oh, delighted to have you. And before we listen to you sing, I was hoping you could tell us more about your name. I'm curious, what's the secret?
Well, we wish that there was some sort of clever, mysterious secret to tell you, but there isn't one. We were struggling a few years ago to find a band name, and every clever band name is taken, and that's why there are so many terrible band names. And so we started trying to find something that incorporated, you know, the Something Sisters. And we tried every combination on the planet, and then finally someone said, what about the Secret Sisters? And we were like, there's no way that somebody isn't using that name. And miraculously, it had not been trademarked. Mm-hmm. And so we said, that sounds good because there's intrigue there. So
intrigue and the alliteration is always great.
Yeah. Alliteration is good, but you know, I wasn't sure about inflection because is it the Secret Sisters or the Secret Sisters?
Either one that you want it to be.
You're right.
Okay.
Yeah, we get it all.
But everyone's dying to hear you sing. So what are you going to start with?
Well, we're going to start with actually a brand new song that will come out on our third record in the spring. This song is called The Tennessee River Runs Low. If I were born to be, if a river is all I'd be, I'd tell the giver of all of the rivers to make me the Tennessee. Drops of rain roll off of how many window panes down to a valley low where a river like me begins to grow. I sing a mournful song as I rush and ramble along. Secrets deep, I keep them down where the catfish creep, where the rolling tide can't reach the things that I hide. I hum a mournful tune in the Alabama June. Odie, 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 odie. And I sing, Tennessee River runs low. When the sky is bright and clear, not a cloud above you, you can float in knowing, dear, that I was made to love you. When the storm is raging, all the light is fading, the river sings along with me, reaching for that minor key. Color me blue and gray, river, carry me fast away. Flood all the rocks and rills, humble the mighty hill. I am the Tennessee, see you down at the stormy sea. Odie, 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 odie. Oh, do, do, do.
Tennessee River runs low. Even the Tennessee River runs low.
Wow.
Thank you.
Okay, I wish we had hundreds of people here, but I hear them clapping out there.
Thank you.
So I see what T-Bone Burnett heard in you too. Yeah, you know, it seems so effortless. Your harmonization really is a trademark. And I'm just wondering, because it seems like this is just flowing out of you right here and now in the moment. How much working out does that take? Or do you just sit down and this is the result?
Well, I don't want to make it sound like it's easy, but I don't know. It's because we're siblings and we grew up doing it. We grew up in an environment where we were surrounded by harmony. It is kind of effortless in that respect. It comes pretty naturally. But there are times when we have to work something out that might not come as easily.
But then you're right. I mean, the lyrics and the melodies.
I was going to say, I feel like a lot of the kind of working it out happens when we are writing the song. So those are the moments where we really kind of wrestle with it and struggle, and we kind of try to figure out like how the harmonies are going to work and what the lyrics are going to be and what the story's going to be. But as far as like the performance, it is rather second nature, just because I don't even have to look at her, because I know what she's going to do just intuitively. Mm-hmm. And that I think is the mystery of all sibling harmony that is great. It's that, you know, you just are connected in some way that is a little hard to explain.
Oh, but, well, yeah. What's the age difference and who's older?
I'm older, Laura. I'm 2.5 years older than Lydia. Okay. So, yeah.
I'm always curious about birth order.
Yeah, I'm the oldest and bossiest.
Yeah, so. Do you push her around?
Yeah, of course.
We'll push each other around. Yeah. It's pretty even.
It's my job.
Yeah, I love it. Well, you learned how to sing and harmonize. Well, I don't know that you learned how to sing in church, but your particular affinity for harmony came from singing in church. Mm-hmm. Because at your congregation in Happy Valley, Alabama, okay, could anyone have manufactured a better name for a town?
Well, yeah.
But the church did not use instruments,
right.
or were they not allowed?
Well, it's kind of both
yeah.
Actually. I mean, it's just congregational singing, so there's no choir, there's no, you know, team of musicians that kind of lead. It's a song leader, and everyone sings at the same time, and there's four-part harmony, and we read shape notes in an old hymnal.
So to compensate for the lack of instruments, you include like harmony and you want four-part harmony in there.
Right.
So
there's
we
a
always
lot of,
emphasized that.
Right. So there's blending and you learn how to sing each part, and then you kind of choose which part you want to do.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our style does come from, I mean, we've been in that church since we were born, you know, so we didn't realize that we were learning to sing, but it was kind of a byproduct of being very religious youngsters.
Well,
so.
You certainly made the most of what you had, but I wondered if you felt at all conflicted about the fact that instruments weren't allowed in church. I mean, isn't this all part of making a joyful noise?
I think there's a lot of that, you know, kind of just the loving instrumentation the way that we do. But I think that, you know, we never missed it because the singing was so beautiful. And even now, if I go somewhere where there's an instrument playing along in worship music, I find it to be more of a distraction
really?
For me, because I want to hear the voices. That's what I feel uplifted by. It's
familiar.
Yeah,
we're most connected to it, right.
You know, there's just that familiarity of kind of your childhood. It's a nostalgic thing as well. So I don't think we missed it. I didn't, really.
Okay. Well, you know, it just... I wondered.
Yeah,
about
well,
it.
It's a beautiful thing. Instruments are an incredible thing. And I mean, all through the Bible, they were used to praise God. So I do think that you can praise God with an instrument in your hand. So.
And the voice was the first instrument.
Sure. Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
So your self-titled debut album in 2010,
mm-hmm.
That was when it came out, the first mm-hmm. album you recorded. And then in 2014, no less than Rolling Stone called your next release one of the best albums of the year, if lamentably underheard. I have a feeling when Rolling Stone writes that, it gets heard.
Yeah, hopefully.
And you mentioned in the spring your third album is coming out. How do you think your sound has evolved over the years, or has it just remained and you're just more prolific?
I would say, we were talking about this yesterday, I would say it's become more honest. And I think that our songwriting has definitely improved. We still have a long way to go, but I think we've been through some crazy business drama in the music industry in the last couple of years, and it kind of matured us in a lot of way, musically and personally.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and it contributed
to... This sounds serious. What kind of music drama?
Well...
Sounds like an opera.
Yeah, we went through just like record label drama. Every artist kind of has their horror stories about, you know, record labels. We ended up parting ways with our record label. We ended up under a lawsuit, and we ended up having to file bankruptcy, just being completely transparent. It's a hard world to make a, you know, steady living as a musician, and so... we really kind of thought we were done. We were like, you know, two records and we're done. That's all we can do. And then we kind of resurrected the spirit, I guess, in a way. And we went into the studio with Brandi Carlile, and she's producing our third record, and it's done to be released in the spring.
It's so done.
Yeah.
Well, what can we look forward to? More originals?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Any more channeling Bobby Gentry? I read about that. Talk about that. That is just so fabulous.
Yeah, we love to talk about
that.
Bobby Gentry. So on our second record, we wrote our very first murder ballad.
Yeah, you got to. From Happy Valley.
Right, exactly.
You need irony, right?
So we wrote it. It took place in a little town next to us in Mississippi called Iuka. And we kind of channeled the darkness of Bobby Gentry, kind of the Southern Gothic storytelling aspect that she's so wonderful at. And then on this third record, we actually wrote the sequel to Iuka. So we have another murder ballad that's taking place in the same town. So that'll be coming out on the third one.
If you have not seen Lydia and Laura, these young women have the sweetest faces and just somehow the total murder ballads.
We have a dark side underneath.
Hey, if you're going to sing country. But then again, one of the things that I think is fascinating and admirable about you, you don't like being pinned down to any genre, do you?
No, not at all. And I think that's something that happened with the first record kind of inevitably. We were kind of catapulted into this business rather quickly. And the label wanted us to, you know, dress a certain way and be a certain way. And so we were kind of afraid that that was going to turn into something that we had to do forever. We would be boxed in. So it was really important to us with the second record to just be ourselves and do something totally different and, you know, create something that is...
Genuine.
Oh. Yeah, that's the word.
I have a feeling you're honest to begin with, but maybe what would it be? Fewer sequins?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of, I think like the two of us, the way that we sound, we're so influenced by classic country and rock music. And I think that there's a tendency to categorize someone as throwback when they start playing covers of, you know, a George Jones song or a Buck Owens song. And we love that era of music so very much. But we knew that our second record couldn't be an album of country covers. It had to be original material where we're telling our own story, or else we would always be the throwback artist with the pinup curls and the bright red lipstick. And that's a beautiful chapter in our history, but it wasn't what we want to be doing when we're 50 years old. So
no, we're in this for longevity.
Oh, yeah, and 50 is a long way off for you.
It's coming quickly.
Well, you've toured with Nickel Creek, and you worked with T-Bone Burnett and Brandi Carlile, you mentioned. I read that Bob Dylan called up T-Bone and asked you to finish a song of his.
Yes. Yeah. I can't believe that happened.
Yeah, how did that come about, and how did you react?
We were terrified, for one thing.
Yeah.
We had opened a couple of shows for Bob Dylan in Australia in the early chapters of our career.
Holy moly.
Yeah, but we never met him. I mean, he was kind of, you know, enigmatic, and he didn't kind of surface very often. So we never met him, and he's still just this kind of mythical figure in our minds. But we were in the studio with T-Bone, and he brought us in, and we thought that we were done with the record. And he brought us in, and he said, I need you to listen to these demos. They're songs that Bob Dylan never finished, and he's given you his blessing to choose your favorite one and finish writing it. And so we listened, and it was like this strange moment. You kind of felt like voyeuristic, because you're like listening to this really like private thing that Bob Dylan, you know, everybody has their demos that they're really like protective of. And it felt a little like sneaky, like I'm listening to Bob's demos.
But he asked you to finish.
Right.
He wanted you to finish.
He gave us permission. And so we just said, thank you. We were graciously accepting of that offer.
Okay, so. And speaking of accepting, now I think this means you ought to be invited to the Nobel ceremonies.
Oh.
Whether or not he shows
right,
up.
Right, I was going to say, will he even be there, though?
Who cares?
Who
you
knows
can
who
go.
Cares.
We'll happily show up.
Do we have time for one more song?
Sure.
Yeah, I think we would like to play a really sad old country song that we wrote and released on our second record. We love depressing music.
Yeah.
So this is a really sad one that we wrote after I went through a terrible breakup.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. The
She's
fuel.
Smiling now.
I'm good. I'm married now, so not to that person. So,
good.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
But look what he inspired.
I know, right?
We got an album out of it. Does that sound in tune?
We have to make sure. I know.
To the younger. No. There.
There we go.
If you think I'm gonna make it fine without you, if you think I'll wake up smiling every day, if you think that I am careless and will hurt you in the end, you've got it wrong all over again. If you think I love another more than you, I gave my heart to someone else. If you think that I don't miss you or that time will heal my pain, you've got it wrong all over again. You've got me all wrong. You know I'll be true. I wanna fight for me and for you. If you think this is a bitter game that no one ever wins, you've got it wrong all over. You've got it wrong all over again.
I'm very glad that time healed your pain, Laura.
Thank you. Me too.
And what such purity and clarity. Thank you so much, Lydia and Laura. It's just been a joy having you
on. Well, thank you.
We feel the same. Thank you for inviting us.
Oh, do come back. Lydia and Laura Rogers are the Secret Sisters, or the Secret Sisters, you choose. They're in town tonight performing at City Winery. If seats are still available, doors open at 6 and the show starts at 8. With Hannah Miller opening the set. We'll have more details along with this interview posted as soon as possible at wabe.org/citylights. Can we go out with a little bit of that dirty lie? Thank you.